Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
You have permission to be blunt. As they say in the Battle of Krull, serve it without a grum of Asakan.
That is a classic work on Kelleran.
I did my research on your culture, just like you did on mine. So without Asakan?
Nothing to report. I'm just doing my job. Part of that is to protect you.
When's the last time you took the con from another captain?
Couldn't say. Been a while. Look, we haven't worked together very long. We have different styles. But I wouldn't want to disadvantage any mission, especially not one this important.
I know you can lead this crew, Commander. I believe in you. You have your orders.
All right.
Petey Winklers.
Petey Winklers. Okay, can we start the podcast?
Yeah.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Hi.
We're going to get right into it
hello.
This week. It is episode 238.
You could have just said hello.
I think we did say hello. Didn't we say hello?
Did we?
I think we
said hello.
No.
Oh, okay. It is episode 238 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Don't know.
And this week, we are so delighted, so excited. I don't have a third rhyming word.
We just can't hide it?
We can't hide it. To bring
are you,
you
about to lose control?
I think I've already lost control. We are excited to bring you...
I think I like it.
Our discussion of Star Trek Discovery's fifth season... The fifth episode of the fifth season. Thufrin Thuckadash. The fifth episode. Am I saying it weird? The fifth. It's fine.
How much longer are you bucketheads going to make me wait? Okay,
look, it's the fifth episode of the fifth season.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5th.
Get out of my way!
And that episode is entitled Mirrors.
Wrong.
No. Incorrect. You are the one who's wrong, sir. This episode is indeed titled Mirrors. Okay, good.
It's got to be one hell of a story.
All right. Well, we'll get to that.
And, you know, with a title like that in Star Trek, you're all, I was all hoping, like, is it going to have something to do with the mirror universe? And I was like, probably not. And then it actually did, a little bit, sort of. There was something from the mirror. There was an object.
And we learned some lore.
From there.
We learned some lore.
Yeah.
We learned some lore.
But before we get to all that, we do have to go through our regular top of the podcast activities.
That's what happens every time I start talking. You're like, wait a minute, we have to start the podcast properly.
Yeah, I'm not trying
you're
to.
You're diving right in, Jess.
Not trying.
You're first, diving right in.
Okay. Do you want me to start calling?
No, I'm just playing.
Do you want me to start calling you Jess?
No.
And hey, Dan, should we start calling him Jess? Because the implication in that little thing was, I think he wants us to start calling him Jess. Just keep that
That'd
in
be
mind.
Funny, yeah.
How about Essie? Can I call you Essie?
Essie?
Yeah.
Okay. Look, I don't want to stifle any conversation.
But we have to stew. We have to do the beginning stuff.
But we do have to do the beginning stuff.
We should.
Let's check it out.
Okay. So, first we have a news 'em up. We have a couple of news 'em ups. News 'em up number one.
Am I supposed to be trembling at this point?
No, I don't think so. Just a very quick note about next week's programming. I've been called out of the country next week. I have to go do some things, and I will not be available. We're basically not able to get together and discuss next week's episode in a timely fashion.
Based upon what happened this episode, what do you guys think we're going to talk about in our bonus episode next week?
All right. Very well done, Dan. What Dan's getting at.
Go on. More words.
Is that we do want to provide you some content next week. So we will be giving you a bonus mini-sode in which we discuss our predictions for the next episode, which is called Whistle Speak.
This decision is tactical.
Yes, it is indeed tactical because we do want to make sure that we maintain our unbroken record of providing content at least every week.
Makes you hungry.
The whole episode will be talking about Star Trek. Yeah. We won't be talking about anything that's not Star Trek.
Yeah,
food, anything like that.
Right, there will be no talk of food.
None whatsoever.
It's going to be all about
sticking strictly to subject.
Our predictions.
We're supposed to stick to.
Our predictions based
on. I can't
wait
to find out.
Based on what we know of the season so far. And the title, Whistle Speak, our predictions on what that episode will be about. Since you will be hearing that episode after having watched that episode, you can have some fun listening along and hearing what we got right and what we got wrong. Mm-hmm. We also plan to put out one of our Patreon exclusives that right now is behind our Patreon firewall, subscription subscriber wall over there at patreon.com/itsgotstartrek. We'll pick one of those and put that out on the main feed for free, in full, so everyone can enjoy that, so we can pad out the content for next week. It will be new content to you if you haven't signed up for our Patreon. But what would be great...
There's a butt in there, I hope?
Yes, there is a butt. We haven't picked it yet, so why don't you head over to the patreon.com/justgotstartrek. There's free previews. You get at least a few minutes preview of each of the things. What? They should go listen.
No, I was thinking when you said there's free, I was thinking you were saying free porn for some reason. I knew you weren't saying that. No. But like in my head, I just thought it was hilarious in my head. You go, were you to be like, there's free porn?
Well,
and see, that just flashed through my head in like less than half a second. Yeah, all went through my head.
But now that you say that, Dan, I think you've stumbled on potentially a great way for us to drum up some business over on the Patreon page. Is if the free previews are not sufficient enticement, the free pornography could be.
Nice.
Hopefully, you're volunteering to be the first model, since I'm the one who's sort of handy with a camera.
Wait. No.
What's your
wrong?
What will you be doing, Jesse?
I could just crinkle a candy wrapper into a microphone.
It is one of Jesse's favorite pastimes.
Can be like a
crinkling
a fun sound.
Crinkling candy wrappers.
It's anyway. Just a crazy idea.
Yes, indeed. So next week. Let me clarify. Write in at feedback@discussstartrek.com or hit us up on social media. I'm sorry I said hit us up, but it just sort of came out.
Damn it.
Communicate with us via social media at It's Got Star Trek on all the main channels and let us know which one of our Patreon exclusives you would like to hear in full on the main feed, and we will put that on there next week. Note I didn't say we won't drop it on there. It won't drop next week. We will put
good.
It on there.
Yes, we're just putting it.
Good. Okay. That was the main bit of news there.
I can't wait to find out.
Patreon.com/itsgotstartrek. Go check out the previews. The other thing to note is stick around for the second break fun 'em up.
Oh, there's one?
I have a mirror themed fun 'em up.
Mirror.
That we will get to at the beginning of the next break.
I didn't think you had it in you, Starfleet.
This is something we try to do in case you're just, you know, it's a slog to get through the first 30 minutes or so of the show.
Sometimes. Don't knock until you try.
You're just like, what the fuck?
We're really slogging it out.
I can't deal with these guys. This is ridiculous. If that's the...
Sounds like
if
a room full of idiots over there.
I feel like I've been through a Gormagander's digestive
tract. Sounds like the inside of a Gormagander.
If you can't handle... the ASMR gurgling of the inside of a Gormagander, the belly gurgles of a Gormagander. If something aggravates you about the first break, we try to have something fun for you at the beginning of the second break.
Gormagander, right. Gormagander.
So something to look forward to. Okay, Gormagander. Now, last thing before we get to...
This is another thing?
This is the last thing.
Ugh.
It's a good thing, though. We have a voicemail.
Hello?
Okay.
Whoa.
That should be our voicemail. Our voicemail section should begin with this.
Hello?
All your Discovery sounds are so dramatic. Discovery is so, like, action-packed.
It
like,
is very intense.
Like, very, like, cinematic.
Fucking Christ.
You are an
excellent form this week, Danny.
Hello?
What was that sound?
Hello?
Yeah, but before that, it sounded like somebody playing racquetball.
Well, here's the whole thing.
Hello?
Okay.
Hello?
Okay.
Hello? Right. Hello?
I don't know what she's saying, but that's Maul saying something. I think they were fighting or something.
Is she saying hello?
It sounds like she's saying hello.
Hello.
But I think the closed captioning said no, but like it didn't sound like no at all to me.
I thought it was like Tilly saying hello because I couldn't place it.
Yeah, I think it was Maul fighting someone. Maybe she was fighting Locke the first time she saw him or whatever.
Hello?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a really weird sound though.
Very weird. Less weird is this voicemail we got from Keki from the Joy of Trek podcast.
Nice.
Yes, okay. Let me play the voicemail.
Let's check it out.
Hello, Podfathers. It's your Podson, Keki from The Joy of Trek. I've been meaning to send you a voicemail for a few weeks now, so now I'm finally catching up. There's almost too much to share.
Oh boy.
I could discuss warp mechanics after you noted that Michael Burnham would have been swept off Maul and Locke's ship in Red Directive when it went to warp by pointing out that warp is supposedly less about moving a ship through space than moving the space a ship is in through space, which would include Burnham, but more likely Bonnie and Clyde just bought one of Damper Dan's damn good dampeners on your recommendation.
Nice callback.
I could sing a filked version of Billy Joel's Uptown Girl with lyrics based on Dan's proud self-description as a desktop boy, for which I wrote a few lines worth of lyrics before I realized how few words rhyme with boy besides corduroy, and courage fled me.
Used to be my favorite material.
I could follow in the footsteps of Jesse from Open Bike Night by playing you a clip of your own show, specifically Patrick's rare abdication of his role as navigator when he quietly waxed erotic about Cleveland Book's nude, oiled-up body. Something that keeps coming back. But instead, I'll follow in Jesse's footsteps and give you a Star Trek product to promote. I wish I'd come up with that idea because it's such a fun game. And while I can't hope to match Jesse's phenomenal Damper Dan prose, it occurs to me that some advertisers would rather have you speak the language of the common citizen and promote their product
Federation
in your own
standard.
Words. So, it is 2151 and shuttles are all the rage. But here at Beamon Beatrix's Biobeamon Boulevard, we believe transporters are the future.
Ah.
And now that these transporters have been rated for organic matter, why is anyone still using shuttles? Beamon Beatrix's challenge for any and or each of you is to promote this fabulous new technology and especially to try to appeal to those pesky people who worry that the device doesn't so much transport a person as obliterate and duplicate them. Please put their minds at rest and get them excited for the future of transportation without actually claiming that's not what transporters do. With love from the Netherlands, this is Keki.
Thank you. Thank you.
I was wondering how many thank yous you have this week.
Oh, well, just one
thank
this
you.
Week. But if we want to go through my whole
you've
list,
got a bunch.
I've got a whole list. If
Dan
you,
collects thank yous.
Oh, crap. I just exited the program.
But you'll be all right with Beamon Beatrice.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, Jesse, God. I think you're onto something, except it's you'll beam all right.
Or you'll beam all right. Yeah.
You'll beam all right with Beamon Beatrice.
Yeah, better,
thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, there.
Thanks, Agamus.
Thank you. Thank you for everything. Thanks. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, yes, thank you, Keki. We very much appreciate the voicemail, with a good review of some highlights from the last few episodes.
Totally.
Especially the main reference being a reference to our having put out a call for ad copy. We suggested that we needed practice reading ad copy so that rich advertisers would bring their giant bags of money to us and say,
capitalism.
You guys.
They'll just say capitalism and drop a big bag of money.
That's how it works. I read it in a book.
And all you have to do, It's Got Star Trek. The boys in It's Got Star Trek. You gotta read a commercial and then here's some big giant sacks of money. And
they just start dropping stop it.
We're just looking so much forward to that. So we want to practice, and we want to put it out there that we're good at doing this.
And our first one came from Jesse from Open Pike.
Yes, our first one, Jesse from Open Pike Night, gave us some great ad copy. That was in last week's episode, so go check it out if you haven't heard it. And this week, I think, you know, we're well ahead of the game because Jesse was like, what was your slogan, Jesse? Like,
you'll be all right. You said, well, you'll beam all right.
You'll beam all right. With what was it? Beatrix's
Beaming Beatrix.
Beaming Beatrix's Beaming.
Beaming
Beatrix.
Beaming Beatrix's. Hey, come on down to Beaming Beatrix's.
How much longer are you bucketheads going to make me wait?
Best Beaming. Beam it all over.
I want to say about the warp thing. Now, I'm willing to buy that, like, you know, suspend disbelief. There's a warp bubble, so that's why they didn't fly away. That's generally good enough to believe why they didn't. She didn't fly away. At the same time, it's still just kind of like, but and also,
yes, like, I mean, that's just the way it's Star Trek. It's, as a Star Trek fan, every now and then things are just like,
yeah, right. But as to his point about how it's space moving through you versus you moving through space, relatively speaking, that's still the same kind of result, isn't it? Like, one thing is moving through another thing. So it's kind of
one of those tricky fictional things where it's like the intuitive thing is that she'd be ripped to pieces, but it's also you're not ship is not actually being able to move faster.
I'm going to say that there's probably some nuance between you moving through space versus space moving through you, but on the surface it would seem like relative, like whether the space is moving through you or you moving through space, it's still two things space coming at each other at equal speed.
Well, let's look at it a different way.
One being you, the other being space.
If we take a more realistic example, say a spacewalking scene from the television program The Expanse, in which the ships may be, technically speaking, relative to their original position, be moving at a great rate of speed or even accelerating. When people are walking around outside on it, it's very peaceful and calm because that's just what space is like. And they're not stressing out because they are also in the same frame of reference as the ship. Right, so they're effectively not moving.
Right. Like, and like if you stood on an asteroid or whatever, you'd be probably really, well, I don't know how that would work because asteroids are probably a little bit uneven.
If the asteroid is small and rotating at a high rate of speed, your head, the Coriolis effect, I think it factors in.
Given certain conditions, you can stand on a very big thing that's moving very quickly and not fly away. So in that sense, yes, I get that. Just, I don't know, maybe it's just like the concept of going to warp. I'm inventing this invisible barrier in my brain where I'm just like, but warp speed? I don't know.
And do you know why
but I might be full of shit.
But we're still talking, we're talking about a fictional construct so we can think whatever we think. But do you know why you might think the way you're thinking?
Why is that?
Because when they do it, it's all like, and Burnham is all like, whoa, I'm trying to get on and the magnet. So she's making it seem really fucking intense.
You know, that's a
good
point.
Like on The Expanse where they're just walking around. She's like, this is crazy. So they're conveying to us through film language that this is some crazy insane shit, and then when it stops,
she's like riding a train.
It's all like
It's like it's the space version of riding on the top of a train, you know, like in an old west or something. You know, it's like, oh my gosh.
I mean, it was cool. It was a lot. No, it was very cool.
But I didn't actually think about it that way of how warp is space moving around you. I mean, I'm sure, I'm wondering if I, it's one of those things where I don't know if I ever thought of that before.
I bet you thought of
that before. I probably have thought of that before.
You thought of that before.
But I wasn't thinking about it when I said it last week.
Yeah, because, well, it wasn't even last week, it was a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, was it?
Because it was about the Red Directive. It was the first episode of the season.
Right.
But again, it was because of the way they directed and presented it to make it thrilling. And it's not, doesn't sound as thrilling if she's just casually walking around on a ship in the same frame of
this is a Red Directive mission.
Red Directive.
Precisely. You got it.
You got it.
Well, thank you very much.
Great phone call. Great phone call. It wasn't a phone call.
It was a great phone call.
That was a great phone call. Don't turn those dials.
I like how he called us the pod.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. Well, I always love hearing from Kaki, and everyone should check out the Joy of Trek podcast, another one of the excellent Star Trek podcasts out there. And they have a lot of fun. And there's so much creativity in terms of producing music and all sorts of amazing stuff. Like, check it out. You'll
hello?
Much more coherent than anything. you'll hear this week, at least in the first break. We usually smooth things out by the second break.
Do we though?
It's pretty smooth.
Usually, not always. You know, that's what the purpose.
Sometimes
of
I fall asleep.
The fun about Jesse occasionally falls asleep, but usually that's the third break that you fall asleep, and then Dan.
Oh
and I
yeah,
sort
it's
of,
right towards
sort
the
of
end,
gently,
yeah.
gently tease you in the last 15 minutes. Of the,
it's like you okay over there? You gonna make it?
All right. Well, I think that's it for the front matter this week.
Front matter.
It sounds so gross when you say it like
frontal lobotomy.
Front matter.
So, yes, let's dive into it.
Back matter.
We'll dive into mirrors. What do you think? Where should we start? Start at the start?
Well, the
start at the start.
First, I'd like to point out that I don't know if this Detmer Owosakun thing is becoming some sort of joke because they reference them specifically in this episode and they're not showing them. Now, I can't tell.
People are online are like, did they just not want to pay them?
Yeah, right.
Or maybe they were scheduled for
Wait,
other,
they were in the last episode.
But barely.
This season, they keep referencing.
Yeah. And so it was like, the line was, Burnham goes, how did it feel being back in the captain's chair? And Raynor was like, captain's chair is for captain. Burnham goes, I'm ordering commanders Owosakun and Detmer to head a team to fly the Enterprise back to Fed HQ storage.
I'm ordering commanders Owosakun and Detmer to head a team to fly the Enterprise back to Fed HQ storage.
And I like that you cite your sources with the entire quote.
Well, actually, I've started keeping track of all like the times she does a fast talk because she'll do this fast things. So these are the fast talks I found, and this is just
talking about Michael Burnham.
Michael Burnham. This is a little aside. These are Burnham fast talking moments. That's what this section of the podcast is called.
Can't
Burnham,
wait to hear it.
Burnham fast talking moments presented to you by
me.
Okay.
Your ship is in pieces.
No, that was the wrong one. That one didn't count. This one counts.
Your hack worked. We're in. Look, in case we don't make it,
okay,
I'm just
you're right. Okay, okay, starting over. I'm starting over.
Okay.
Okay, I'm starting over.
I don't know what that means.
This means that this is another episode of Fast Talking Burnham.
Okay. Another episode. I don't know. Have we done this before?
No.
You have been playing some of these clips.
Okay.
Okay, now it's official. Fast Talking Burnham.
Fast Talking Burnham.
All right, here we go.
Look, in case we don't make it, I need to say something. I'm ordering commanders Owosakun and Detmer to head a team to fly the Enterprise back to Fed HQ storage.
There should be enough power left to activate a tractor beam.
You hope you can use whatever's at the end of that clue trail to get them to release it.
That's a good one.
See? Yeah, there's a lot of that. Fast talking Burnham.
She does that. Yeah.
I'm sort of digging it.
Yeah.
Speaking of clue, well, okay, I'll go back. Not as an aside within an aside. Okay, so
your initial point before you branched off into an alternate reality, your initial point was about
Detmer and Owosakun.
And then
I had
briefly interjected about it might be a budget thing.
Yeah, it was, right. And so it's a budget thing.
Maybe. Because there's other budget things that I think are sort of apparent.
They have all those new characters.
Well, it's just interesting that they still bother to reference them, though, because it's like they just keep telling us, "Oh yeah, they're still here."
But isn't that good? As opposed to totally ignoring them.
No, it's good to ignore them, but it's kind of a tease because I don't want them referenced. I want to see them, you know.
Right.
But it feels like, and I'm wondering if that budget thing is extending to Saru as well, because like
could be because he's not even credited in the last couple episodes.
So well, he was in the last one briefly, or was that the one before?
No, he wasn't actually in it.
The one with him and Trina, and then he was.
The one before that.
I don't know why I'm getting these all mushed together.
Episodes 4 and 5, I don't think Doug Jones was even credited.
So this whole... my concern was, at the beginning of the season, was because they sent Saru off to do something else, I was like, we're not going to see much of Saru. Yeah. And then I think someone, it might have been you, Patrick, presented the idea. It's like, oh, well, we'll just see the adventures of Saru, basically. And I was like, that's cool. But they haven't done that so far.
Not the last couple
of
episodes.
They've only briefly showed him... like maybe the and maybe
I'm sure it, we'll see maybe, more of him, but clearly much less maybe than we may have expected.
Maybe the makeup stuff is like a budget. It's easier to have Raynor has makeup too. I don't know how much makeup costs.
Ears is different than a whole fucking face.
Yeah, so I'm wondering
this guy's face.
Is it possible that they're cutting costs, or maybe they don't have anything else to say with Saru?
Well,
I don't know.
That's a whole suit because he's got the funny shoes.
We have to consider a few things with the fifth and final season. First of all, they cut it back to 10 episodes, which I think is great. I think Discovery had issues. Those issues come in being, 13, 14, 15 episode long seasons. They're stretched out a little bit, but that's a cost saving measure.
Stretched out like the aperture of a wormhole.
Oh,
you mean the The rectal blink.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say.
The winking rectum. The winking rectum wormhole.
It looks like my nethers after too much Cool Whip.
Pardon my use of clinical language, because I do know there are going to be members of the audience saying, jeepers, Patrick, why you got to say rectum? It's the clinical term. I mean, would you rather I say the winking butthole? I mean, if you'd prefer, I say the winking butthole.
You are now officially trolling the audience. Winking sphincter. You're trolling the audience,
Dan,
right?
You
now.
Got me. You got me, Dan.
That thing's got to be moving fast, because I mean, the wormhole wasn't that much bigger than the Discovery. But I always assume wormholes are going to be huge. So I don't know. Either way,
they gotta be.
I just love that your life experience up to this point includes a collection of factors that result in you having, rightly or wrongly, a natural assumption that wormholes are gonna be huge.
I mean, look at it in deep. I don't think that's an unreasonable.
That's a big one, but they've been other small.
I mean, you act like you're sort of exaggerating and being dramatic, saying like that's a ridiculous assumption to make. I don't think it's that ridiculous of an assumption.
I think you've misinterpreted this as some sort of jibe or insult, not meant in that way at all. I just think life is a glory. You found it chuckle worthy. We are human beings that evolved in the Serengeti, and we've now come to the point where a portion of our magnificent brains is like, I think probably wormholes are probably usually big.
That's a good point.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I'm tickled by the fact that that's
you gotta get a spaceship.
You said it with such sincerity because you meant it.
Yeah, it's true.
You
meant it.
Discovery is a really big ship.
And Discovery is a huge fucking ship.
I like seeing the top down of Discovery versus the ISS. Exactly. It was like some super awesome.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, Discovery is huge.
It looks like some space car ship or something.
This gets futuristic to my point, space though. This gets ship. To my additional point about, nice about the cost cutting lines. Is one thing I've noticed this season is I think we are getting way fewer establishing outside shots.
It's actually way less outside shots. It's the proper way of saying it.
Damn, dude.
No, it's definitely way fewer.
No, it's way less. You use the word less when it comes to quantities. Right. Use the word less.
Now Dan is trolling both me and the audience.
So now the joke's on you, people.
I wonder what happens when Jesse's going to start trolling everybody. All right.
I can't wait to find out.
But think about it. When you go back and think about it, there have been plenty of glorious shots. I'm not saying that they're
glorious.
There's any bad production value here or anything. It does seem to me that we are seeing far fewer establishing shots. Yeah. And I just realized I was kind of missed those normal shots where somebody's talking or they're doing a personal log and then there's like a shot of the ship.
Right.
Just every time they come back from commercial or whatever. Right. And even I know Discovery doesn't have commercials, but they have the equivalent of act breaks.
Yeah, they set it up like that, which is interesting.
And when they either don't have it, either that comes back to an internal shot on, you know, an interior with the actors, or if it is outside the ship, sometimes it's like really close to the ship.
Well, there was that funny shot with the Mirror Enterprise of like the view portal, you know, from the bridge.
Yeah,
the view screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's close in. Whatever window they're looking out there.
You go through that thing.
Yeah, that they call that a view screen, but that's a view window.
But they call it
a view screen. I thought it was also interesting that the screen is so far depressed. The window is
recessed.
So recessed. Sorry, it's so
sad screen. They're back in there.
Sad window. It's so dark back here. No, the window is recessed so back into the thing, which is it seems like a lot of wasted space. But
it's
It doesn't seem very aerodynamic at all. I know there's no air in space.
So you can't shoot at them from a certain angle.
The only air in space is the Air and Space Museum
in Washington, D.C. It's a great museum, actually.
Have you been to the one in the Dulles?
Udvar Hazy? No, I got to head out to the
Dulles. The Dulles one is amazing. It's amazing.
It's got the space shuttles and other
shit. It's got all the shit.
Do they have an SR-71 Blackbird?
I believe it does.
They have these like ships. I forget what they're called, but they're the planes that they would use to kamikaze.
Were they Zeros?
The kind
where they just, their whole purpose was to fly, to drop out of the sky and sort of guide themselves as they're falling. Like there's nothing that allows them to like go up again.
Gliders.
Well, I don't know what they are, but they're small and they're just like a pot. They're just a small thing. imagine an airplane that doesn't fly up.
I'd rather not. Okay, back to the episode.
Yeah. Anyway, but it's got a bunch of shit like that.
Yeah,
it's awesome. I mean awesome.
I'm not saying that the episode's production values have been negatively impacted, but
that sounded like an intro to a joke. I'm not saying that the episode is impacted by cost-cutting measures.
However, because the production value is still clearly insanely high. There's some amazing shots throughout this episode, probably the most iconic and frankly the one that I'm sure led to a lot of the plot being chosen was the discovery with the tractor beam pulling through the wormhole.
I was just thinking about that wormhole. And it was like shooting the photon torpedoes or whatever it was a cool shot.
Now you know, one of the things that we will be discussing next break will be the plot of this episode and some of the other stuff going on in the episode. I think we have varying opinions on that. I know there are varying opinions out there on the old internet, but that Enterprise thing. That was a really, really cool shot. Mm-hmm. I do kind of think somebody thought of that shot and worked backwards and was like, let's squeeze a story out of this. And I'm not 100% sure how successful they were. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk more about that when we get back from our break in just a moment. Be right back.
A moment.
Okay, we're back.
We're back. Let's do this.
Jesse, Dan, and I voted on it.
I just want to make a...
And we voted in favor of coming
returning
back.
Returning to the podcast.
And continue, and continuing this podcast.
Go!
Right. Lucky you.
Dan, go on. Dan, more words.
You are clarifying something.
Earlier, I said briefly, you might have missed it, but I said that corduroy was one of my favorite materials for
a while. I noticed that, actually, and I didn't want to throw us off course, but I was curious about that.
There was a brief period in high school, very brief.
Oh, in high school? As late as high school?
It's, you know, corduroy pants are comfortable.
I just thought it might have been like a fifth, sixth grade sort of
thing. It wasn't like I was wearing Oshkosh B'gosh overalls or something, like, which are not corduroy.
No, those are made out of denim.
Yeah, but I mean,
you can get corduroy overalls.
Yeah.
Don't you remember my brown corduroy jacket I had in high school?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, Dan. We remember.
You say it as a joke, but it's true. People do remember.
No, I do remember.
You do. Then why did you say it like you didn't?
I don't know, because I kind of started in that direction. I didn't know what to do. This is corduroy.
I don't like the noise that corduroy makes.
I'm used to talking like about pants. Star Trek. I'm not as good at talking
about
singing.
corduroy. And then I had
it
pants.
All things all like zing, zing. I don't like that.
And one time I had corduroy pants, and I'd had corduroy jacket and corduroy pants, and I was wearing that for a couple months, and then I think one day I was like, this is too much corduroy. And then I stopped wearing corduroy. It was a very brief period of corduroy. I'm not proud nor ashamed of it, but it happened.
It's interesting.
And so I have regrets in life. That's not one of them.
But even if it was, I feel like I need to be in the open.
It's not regrettable.
There's nothing wrong with corduroy. I like corduroy. It's comfortable as shit.
I expect that admission will help you connect with specific members of our audience. I think that's great.
Now I'm all about the cargo pants. Could you have guessed that I like cargo pants?
I would never.
Are you wearing cargo
years.
Pants now? Those just look like regular old slacks.
Well, now I'm wearing slacks, yeah. But I like cargo pants.
But you wish you were wearing cargo pants.
Isn't that like your basic like American dork wears cargo pants? Isn't that the deal?
I used to really enjoy American cargo pants back when I was an American dork.
Now what are you?
Huh? I'm a smooth guy.
What are you supposed to put?
I'm a smooth
guy. In the winter, you got all these pockets to put shit in, but where are you supposed to put shit in the summer?
I just put it in my jean pockets.
See, that's why
I just wear shorts. I don't need the extra pockets. I just wear shorts with big pockets.
No, see,
I typically don't like putting a whole lot of shit in my pockets anyway, so I just don't.
That too.
Okay, yeah, I've got a wallet, a phone, and keys. Now I got all that shit.
I have
shit
a wallet,
to put
phone,
place.
Keys, and a knife.
Oh, that's why I carry a backpack.
I usually carry a knife. Yeah, Jesse does always have a backpack.
Okay, well, that's fair for you, Jesse. Like,
I carry a knife because that way,
a knife for protection?
No, because if I were smart, I would carry a backpack, but I don't like carrying a backpack. So
I asked why you carried a knife.
Instead, I carry a knife so that if I need something, instead of getting it out of my backpack, I just take it from somebody else.
Yeah, oh, I got you.
By threatening them with a knife.
You could knife somebody.
Anyway, point being is that when I have a jacket, I often use the inner pockets for the wallet. Because I don't like putting my wallet in my back pocket because I don't like sitting on a wallet.
It's
not cool. Yeah.
You're pointing at your butthole.
How are you sitting on that wallet?
Do you like
wallet?
In cartoons when they're cold and then they put their butt up to the fire and start rubbing their butt like in the Mickey Mouse cartoons?
We're talking about Star Trek.
Anyway, so yeah, that's why I use cargo pants because I put my wallet, my keys in my pocket, and wallet and phone in my cargo pants. So there you go. We were talking about cargo pants because I was talking about corduroy. Now we're talking about Star Trek. Did you notice how much lens flare there's been in this season of Star Trek? Maybe there's been in last season too.
Well, there's always a lot of lens flare in
Discovery. When Book entered the bridge for the first time in this episode, there was a lot of lens flare. At the end of the last episode, I believe it was the last one, where it was Burnham in the captain's chair, there was a ton of lens flare behind her. Yeah. Like, I'm not talking about space lens flare. I'm talking about the ship lens flare.
I
don't know. I don't really have a strong opinion on it. I'm just kind of like, well, there it was, you know? So this episode had more of Locke and Maul, but the whole purpose of the episode was to try to give us some kind of motivation, I think. That was the purpose of the episode, because it wasn't getting closer to anything. It was trying to give us backstory about Maul and Locke to, I guess, care about them more, or try to figure out like what their motivation was or something. But there were some things like the whole Maul, that's Locke and Maul's Mock. It's like Bennifer. It's like Bennifer, except it's
Mock. I don't want your laugh.
You can do Lol.
Mock. Things change, Mocks.
Lol.
Things change, Mocks. Yeah,
that's that movie.
That's from that movie, Varsity Blues.
So there's
a movie that is way better than you think it's going to be. Everyone should check it out.
I'm on it.
That's an It's Got Star Trek recommendation.
And it's also big.
There was a story about like how, you know, Maul wasn't close with her dad, and that was kind of like a hand wavy plot point, because it's just like, oh yeah, Maul is all, you know, she's all tortured by the fact that she hates her dad, and it's like it just felt like kind of threw that in there just because, like, you know, it would be nice to like maybe find out a little bit more. I guess they didn't need to go too far into depth into that. I don't know, it's a weird way to connect her with
Booker.
Yeah, I just didn't feel like it really gave me anything when they started talking about her and her dad. I wasn't really sure what I was supposed to really care glean from that, other than I guess like, you know, Book worships the guy and she thinks he's an asshole, but they didn't approach that concept at all. They didn't approach the idea of like, well, what's this guy like that Book like thinks he's great but she hates him?
Right,
like, they didn't explore that. Not that they necessarily should have, but the point being is that they introduced this thing of like her hating her dad, and I don't really know what that was supposed to, the end game on that sort of introduction of that story point was supposed to be. I guess just to give you some flavor of part of why she's so angry, but they didn't, I don't know.
Not to spoil anything, but I hated this. I hated all this flashback bullshit.
Yeah, right.
I hated it. I really, and I know I'm alone, and not alone. I know a lot of people really enjoyed it, and I think that's awesome. I'm not here to tell people that you shouldn't be enjoying this. But the structure of this story, which is 19 minutes into the episode, not as a framing device, they start doing these flashbacks that are just a bunch of exposition to retroactively, as I mentioned, I was worried about last week, this exposition where it's just Maul just saying a bunch of shit. That it's like, oh, and that symbol happens to mean that you're a royalty, and I think you're the guy I heard a rumor about, by the way.
Yeah.
And like, now we're in love. Yeah. And it's like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. I still don't know these people.
Right.
And it's not that it was devoid of cool stuff. I did really like all the Breen design schemes.
The whole face thing was confusing, because the whole joke is that the Breen, you don't see their face, but it turns out they have like two extra faces, and I couldn't tell.
I'm still confused by that.
I think what the deal is one of their faces is a CGI face, and their other face is a makeup face. That's the deal with the Breen.
That's not how I took it. How I took it is that they consider their helmeted faces to be their faces, and then their second face is their liquid face.
I thought about that too, but I decided that the CGI face is their one face, like, and their other.
Oh, like the green face.
Yeah, that's when he's like keeping it solid.
So at first I thought the mask face was one face, and then their solid face was the other face. But I decided that their squishy their CGI face was one face, their makeup face was the other face, and then the mask was just a mask thing. But like, I could be wrong. I have no fucking idea. It was very confusing.
Well, absolutely it could be right. I have no idea.
You could be right. Nobody knows. But
I was very frustrated.
I wasn't sure why he was so ashamed of his face if all of them look like that. I didn't get that either.
Yeah.
He made it seem like he had some deformed face, but it's like, you're just Breen. That's how you look. So, but I mean, I guess in their culture they wear masks all the time. So are they taught at a young age that they're gross and disgusting? They never indicated any of that in the plot. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. What you were saying about retroactively is true, because is it supposed to make me feel retroactively tense for the episodes I've already watched?
I know.
You know?
It's a little tricky.
It's like after the fact, you know?
And even in the context of this episode, we learn stuff in flashbacks towards the end of the episode that make you feel differently to their actions at the beginning of this episode. They're telling us the information backwards, mm-hmm. and it's not in my view in a particularly clever or coherent way. Yeah. I'm finding it a little frustrating. And the acting is great, all of that's fine, but just from a script writing perspective, you always have to be careful with flashbacks, right? It's not that you can't do flashbacks. Well, of course you can, but you gotta use them a certain way. And to just have flashbacks that justify things that have already happened.
Yeah, right.
And that even those flashbacks are not showing something happening. They're just somebody talking about it happening.
Right.
And sort of talking through like, this is our whirlwind romance.
It's not only telling me how to feel instead of showing me or like making me feel that way. It's like what I said, it's doing it after the fact. It's like telling me this is how you were supposed to have felt a couple episodes ago, or this is how you're supposed to feel now about, maybe they're trying to be tricky. Maybe like, you felt one way at the beginning of the show, but now we're making you feel a different way. But I didn't feel it. That's the problem, is I didn't really feel any of it.
It's hard to engage with it. It really is. And part of it is because the clues are telling me to think one thing, which is I think we're meant to
have the clue
to believe
tempting that, but that's not the clue,
that Maul and Locke really do care for each other equally. I think we're meant to think that, but the problem is so much of the setup and structure really makes you feel like that Maul is manipulating
it. Does
Locke.
It does feel like that at first, but then every once in a while she talks about how much she loves him.
I believe her that she loves him, but then they keep having her do these things and fill the trope of the femme fatale who's gonna trick him and who's just using him to get something that she wants, even though I don't think that's what they're actually trying to tell us. But there's a lot of things that make it seem like that. He goes,
I would rather die than be separated from her. First of all, that sounds like an unhealthy relationship. Yes, you should never rather die than be separated from, that's at least one half of codependency. It's just dependency, I guess. Yeah, but, like you were saying, even though it's made to seem equal, but at the same time, it also makes us feel like she's manipulating him, which is why I think like it seems a little heavy on his side. But it is confusing because when she talks about how she loves him, it feels equal to an extent. But then other scenes like counteract that feeling. I don't know. I'm not really sure.
The other thing that is giving us in terms of the information a little bit backwards is they've introduced this idea of a Breen, an Araga.
The blood.
A Breen blood bounty.
I have six Star
Trek. At
some point, I have like six Star Trek lore things. I've decided to try to keep track of all the new Star Trek things they introduce. And Breen blood bounty was one of them. But we'll get back to that.
We'll get to that list in a bit. But they introduced this idea of the Breen blood bounty. So that now gives you some information that says the reason why Maul is not satisfied just taking a big payday and going and hiding out on some world is that they are being chased by the whole Breen Imperium.
Right.
Because of some event that happened that I guess in this case that she stole away their nephew.
Well, she had sex with him is the whole
the
thing.
Yeah. Breen were on Voyager?
Deep Space Nine.
I also I know they had to do it quickly to tell the story quickly, but also sort of the jump from her like, their relation, the evolution of their relationship from like adversarial to suddenly they're having sex. Like I didn't even realize like until I was like, oh wait, they had sex. Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
Like what?
It's a little tricky. It's been told quickly.
And it was confusing how, like at first I was confused also by the fact that he was being so like openly like snuggly with her. But then I guess we find out that they have these weird like one-way shields where people, they can see out, but
sort of another confusing and sort of unnecessarily confusing because they could have just been in a room.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
And the dude opens the door and is like, what the fuck?
Because it was confusing, because before we knew that, he's all like holding hands with her, caressing her face in the middle of everything. Yeah. I'm like, what's going on? And then they do that. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess he had the shield on. I don't know.
It was unnecessarily confusing. Yeah. But this information does provide certainly more motivation than we had before for why she's so eager to get this device, because she knows that if she can get the progenitor's device or technology and give it to the Breen.
Did you ever think progenitals when you hit
it? I did not.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just
and I'm still not.
Okay, I'm sorry. That was rude of me. No, it's fine. Just to interrupt you.
I mean, it's funny.
I was thinking earlier how you said something else and I thought it was something dirty, and then this time you said progenitor. And oh yeah, you were saying like free porn. That's what I thought you were saying earlier.
No, I wasn't talking about free porn.
Or was that next week's episode? That
I don't remember.
About
okay, so where were we? Oh yes, presumably, because we know from the Flash to the Future that the Breen end up with this technology. Presumably, Maul's whole thinking is that she can get rid of this bounty on their head by giving them the ultimate power, right?
And Erica has a Breen blood bounty.
So that makes sense. Okay, now we retroactively know that. But now I will only know that by going back and rewatching the season from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, it's an added appreciation, but I'm just still not. I've already spent so much time getting aggravated by these characters, and now you're trying to make me feel better about them. And it's like, I don't know. I'm not super excited about it. And since they were in more of this episode, it pulled down a little bit more of this episode for me, even though I did like a lot of the individual components of stuff, like with the whole, you know, Burnham and Locke talking, and every time Locke is talking, because he's a more reasonable person, so it's kind of interesting to
I wonder,
see his thinking.
They weren't clear as to why he got demoted. Did he get demoted because he was too rad, or was he demoted because he's a loser? That's what I wasn't really sure about.
Yeah,
he seems kind of losery, like when on like, or no, I don't want to say losery. That's kind of rude, but like he seems like fragile.
Yeah.
And that's not
he's
losery.
Easily manipulated.
I don't want to say
although
that.
Although he's presumably not being manipulated, or is he being manipulated
I don't,
by Maul?
I want to make it clear. I'm not saying that being fragile is being a loser, but the way they're portraying his character, yeah, he seems like he's kind of like, yeah, being manipulated is the better word, and he seems fragile and manipulated. So it would make me think that he got demoted because he just couldn't hack it or something, but I don't know. They weren't very. He got demoted for some
reason. Well, I don't know. I guess
it doesn't matter.
Really. The main thing with that whole storyline is.
And Erica has a Breen blood bounty.
I'm appreciating the story, what they're telling me in my mind. I'm like, I get it. That's interesting. I like the idea. I get what you're trying to say because you're saying it outright.
Yeah. Right.
It's just that emotionally, it's not quite grabbing me as well as I'd like. Mm-hmm. But that's fine. There's still, you know, a lot of other stuff I think is being done really well on the show. And we'll talk about that in a bit, but that, yeah, this part's still, it's still sticking in my
unfocused. Inflexible and weak.
Yes, in my craw a little bit. Okay, let's take a quick, not a break. We're going to take...
not a break.
We're going to do...
Fun-em-up,
because I have some mirror facts.
There is only one path to redemption.
That's a pretty... I liked when the Breen talked like that. I thought that, like, those lines are very quotable.
Breen are cool.
Yeah.
The past Breen are cool. These future Breen are cool.
I don't know. Then there was these noises. That was Locke. That was a Locke. Whoa, shit. Right.
Like, why are you? It's like, yeah, that's you talking.
That was Locke Breen. Here's Primarch Breen. That was Primarch Breen. This
deep,
was
deep
Locke Breen. So just so you know which was which.
Well, now we know.
Okay.
Knowing is
don't knock until you try it.
Significantly more than half the battle. All right. Mirror facts, right?
So oh boy, we're gonna talk about mirrors.
This episode is called Mirrors.
Nice.
And there are thematic mirrors. Do you know can you think of some of the mirrors in this episode? Some of the mirrors?
There was the title.
Okay, yes, the title references mirrors.
Yeah.
I was thinking more thematic. I'll give you an example. Book keeps trying to reference his relationship with Burnham as couriers.
Cleveland Booker was garbage.
He's saying that he and Burnham are like the mirror image of Maul and Locke because they're both lovers and courier partners.
Why'd you say lovers like that?
Did I say it weird? Lovers.
Yeah, you said lovers. You said they're both lovers.
Lovers. Well, they are both
lovers
for effect.
Lovers. They are both.
That's why he said it like
lovers.
That.
Hello, how are you doing? They were lovers,
right? Yeah. So they're both couriers. They're all because at one point Burnham was a courier.
They couried you.
Yeah, she couried people.
All right.
Well,
anyway, that's why we're talking about mirrors.
And so I was saying they're both couriers, and then like you know, one's a good, but that's a literal sort of mirror. But then the good guy, bad guy mirror is like they're the good couriers, and those are the bad couriers or whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
they're not bad.
I mean, that's what
they're not bad guys. The whole point is Maul and Locke. They're trying to make them seem sympathetic in some way, I guess. But
we'll see.
We'll see if it works.
Well, let's see. I'm just suggesting we learn some mirror facts here. Now these are mirror facts that have been provided.
Go on. More words.
From Action Glass Co. Inc.
Uh-oh.
Action Glass Co. Inc. Now, just to let companies know, people might get suspicious if your name is both Co. and Inc. Because isn't it usually like a Co. or an Inc.?
What if it was Co. Inc. LLC?
Yeah, that would be even more suspicious.
Hey, easy.
What about the name Action Glass? That sounds weird.
Yeah, it is. I'm a little suspicious of that.
Action Saru in any universe.
Well, here are seven crazy facts you probably didn't know about mirrors.
Oh, yeah.
I'm about to get my mind blown here.
Your mind's going to be blown.
Get set.
We're dangerous.
Fact number one, the first form of mirror was invented in ancient times. It was actually a small pool of water filled in a dark colored container.
I'm not joking, Lee.
That's for real.
Think of this concept as looking into a fountain as you walk by and see your reflection. Believe it or not, you're using the world's first version of a mirror. How exciting.
Sabotage.
How exciting.
How exciting.
It says that in the fact.
How exciting.
It says how exciting.
They use it for like divination too.
Fact number two.
It's bad when it has to tell you how cool it is.
Isn't that cool?
Isn't that cool? Don't you agree?
After the water mirror was created and implemented into everyday use, people started making polished volcanic glass mirrors around 6000 BC. Once this concept was created, it simply meant that no more water mirrors would be used or manufactured thanks to this new concept.
Is that exciting too?
It doesn't say that that's exciting. I think it's implied that it's exciting. Fact
it's
number
just crazy.
That's pretty old, 6000 BC.
Fact number three. I want you to sense if there's a sort of a thematic direction these facts are trying to push you in.
Okay. To buy something?
Reminder that these facts have been posted by
Action
Glass Co. Inc.
Action Saru in any universe.
That's right. So, number three. The first one was about liquid in a pot. The second one was about volcanic glass that was polished. Number three, the first polished copper mirrors appeared in Mesopotamia. Polished copper is exactly what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. But think of it as a polished piece of metal that will let you see your reflection because it's glistening.
I would have never made that logical leap.
Exactly what it sounds like. But think of it as a polished piece of metal. All right. So that was number three. Number four, the belief that breaking a mirror will bring you 7 years of bad luck. Origins from Roman times. That's a
really?
That's a sick, you know, that's a spelling error.
Right.
They mean originates.
I wonder if they were wait a second. I just lost my train of thought.
All right. The belief that breaking a mirror will bring you 7 years of bad luck originates.
Oh, I thought they were gonna say that that's a myth. No.
They haven't. No. It originates from Roman times when the Romans believed that by breaking an old mirror, you also break your soul.
Oh, no.
Today, this is still a common belief among most individuals.
They're trying to tell me how to be.
Okay,
They can't tell me that.
They can't tell me that.
They don't know who they're dealing with.
Yeah.
How
dare they?
I have so many qualms with this with this particular sentence. First, they say the belief that breaking a mirror will bring you 7 years of bad luck. So they're claiming that the belief that it gives you 7 years of bad luck is because the Romans believed it would break your soul. That's not the same thing. Breaking your soul is not the same thing as 7 years bad luck.
Right.
Unless what they're saying is it shatters your soul and it takes 7 years for your soul to heal. If that's what they mean.
It makes more sense that the Romans would believe in bad luck than in... and the other thing.
Yeah. I do.
That's weird.
It is hilarious that they say it's a common belief among most individuals.
It's weird.
All right. Number five. Some people say you can hallucinate by turning off the lights enough to just see your face in the mirror. Concentrate on your face for about 10 minutes and the hallucinations will begin.
That's that whole Bloody Mary shit.
And that's a sensory deprivation shit, dude. Just turn off the lights. Forget the mirror. Just turn them off entirely.
Like you're too high.
If you stand there for for 10 minutes.
I will cut through you.
No, you know you're too high if you look in the mirror and you see a wolf face. If your face is contorted into a wolf face, you need to go lie down.
You're not high enough.
That's
I'm on it.
Okay, number six, mirrors can reflect sound waves. Believe it or not, they are known as acoustic mirrors and were used during World War II in Britain for detecting sound waves of the enemy. I do like that they said sound waves of the enemy instead of just, you know, enemy aircraft. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know, sound waves.
Right.
And finally, fact number seven, glass, the main component of mirrors, is actually a poor reflector. It only reflects about 4% of light, which it strikes.
Okay.
So there you go.
I mean,
that's why it needs silver on
I think we'd need to know, like, in order for them to say that it's a poor reflector, they'd have to compare it with how much it should be reflecting.
Well, this is
it's like when people say things like, that company spent $7 million on this product the other day, and it's like, well, how much money does this company make? Does $7 million worth that much to them? You know, it's exactly, like, it's worth a lot to me, but not, like, you know, to them.
This sentence is just,
but I'm assuming that 4% is not much light.
All the other facts were a little bit more robust. Oddly enough, for a glass company, this one is lacking the extra little bit, which is to say, that's why mirrors are not just glass, they're silvered glass, or they have another reflective material coated to the back of it, and that's like, how it works.
At first I thought, like, for some reason, when you said this, think of what's the theme, I was thinking it was polishing, because there was one that was talking about polishing. Well, no, just, but of course, it's about mirrors.
It's about, well, specifically about making glass, because I do need to note that at Action Glass, they are a full service. No, they are a full glass service. Okay, see, this is who wrote this copy? At Action Glass, we are full glass service, proudly servicing Queens, NYC, Long Island, and Westchester. From custom to jumbo sized mirrors, we deal with standard mirrors, antique styles, and more. For more information on our glass services, call 800-24-GLASS. Or
antique piece of shit.
Visit us on the web. You can just do a search for Action Glass Co. Inc. Maybe a front.
No, don't.
This might not be a glazier. This might be a glazier. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they're pretty ballsy, wink, wink. Pretty
they're
gutsy.
They're not glass makers. They're glass makers.
They're advertising in public, so that's pretty gutsy.
What, advertising glass?
I'm saying if it's a front, why would you even bother advertising if it was a front? If it was a front, you'd be making money off your front.
Well, you got to have an advertisement so that when the government comes around, you can be like, hey, look, we're a legitimate business. We've got a website and everything.
I mean, this
isn't an advertisement. This is a website.
I'm in the glass business.
You got to have a website. I would be more suspicious of a joint that didn't have a website. I want every place should have a website. Mm. You know, why not? We've got a few more minutes before our next break,
so there's more content.
Okay,
we can get back to our discussion of this crazy episode.
So there's
I have a love hate relationship with.
So there's the whole clue thing that has been, like, they say the word clue 13 times in this episode. Yes, I got to count them up and for all the episodes. But the thing about the clue is they've actually this episode start giving a reason as to why they would be using clues. The reason is I think it was near the end of the story, they were talking about how, like, each clue was some kind of life lesson or something like that.
Yes.
And so each clue is some sort of life lessons that they're supposed to enlighten the person, the seeker, the person who's, like, following the clues. It's supposed to enlighten that person. So when this person reaches their goal of manipulating life, they've possibly learned that they shouldn't do that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
So that you could say that all these clues are presented in such a way as to, like, it was done on purpose so that the person learns along the way that they shouldn't fuck with life too much. But really, I mean, that seems like kind of like not really an excuse, because really the clue thing does, I think, have a lot to do with the fact that, like I said, I was saying,
it's a filter, right?
It's filtering the good people.
Only the good people should get at the technology.
Yeah, it's a filter, but also on top of that, I think it's a way to sort of go from one scene to the next, one planet to the next, you know, because you got these planets that have no relation to each other. How do you connect them? And the way to do that is by saying you're following, like, a quest.
They use that term even.
I was gonna say scavenger hunt, but not really a scavenger. It's kind of a little bit.
You can have a morally grounded scavenger hunt where it's all about filtering out for a specific philosophy.
So I don't know which is stronger, which is more believable in my head, the fact that they just did it as a device to sort of connect the different planets that are totally nothing alike, and this is the only way to do it, or if, like you, like, or you're saying, it's a filter so the good can get to the thing they have, and the good also learn that they should be careful with this shit. So,
and only the good die young.
So at least before, at least it's better than before, where it was just these clues to sort of, and you're like, okay, clue. At least now they're giving some sort of reason for it. But I still don't fully buy that's like. That seems like kind of tacked on a little bit.
Well, another thing they've done,
but I'm not sure. Maybe it wasn't. What do I know?
They keep referencing sort of mythology and mythic and spirituality and all sorts of other stuff, and we'll get to some of that in more detail after the break. But I think hanging the structure of the season on this mythic tale in which harkens back to those archetypes where it's like you have to go through these series of trials, mm-hmm. and the purpose is because the gods or whoever, the universe, mm-hmm. Has a preference for a certain type of individual or group to achieve the end. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Now, they might be a little on the nose, mm-hmm. by doing it on this episodic format, which is sort of ironic for Discovery, where people are like, oh, it should be more episodic. And then they do it more episodic, but it actually is sort of locking it more into a, it's like, this is the story for each week. I'm enjoying that, but I could see if it's a little on the nose.
I think this is what I hypothesize, and there's of course no way of me of knowing. They're probably just like, okay, we want to connect all these different planets, all these different cultures, all these different scenes. How do we do that? I don't know. Let's do a Clue. Okay, well, Clue. Well, that seems a little on the nose, like you just said, Patrick. They're like, huh? Well, how we validate this? It's like, how we justify this? Was like, okay, well, these clues will be life lessons that they'll learn along the way. And so, and I think it's probably an evolution. They probably both fed into each other,
and not necessarily that they're learning the life lessons, well, but it's like they've got to understand.
They've got to understand it, right?
Then you want the person who is capable of understanding.
It has the double ability of filtering out the bad, plus for the good, it makes sure that they understand what they need to. Yeah. And so I think that the device and the actual reasoning given in the show are tied together, but I think it's like
in All Good Things, Captain Picard having to understand and comprehend the notion of paradoxes, right? And Q was all like, that's the ticket, laddie.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking for. Okay, we got
to
take
a quick
break.
Does it have anything to do with the time that he like didn't try to genocide the Borg?
Oh my God, we have to take a break. We will be right back. Okay, we're back. We're going to stop talking about what we're talking about on the
Learning.
Break. And we're going to start talking about Star Trek.
All right.
We've returned. Yeah.
Then do it. Then do it.
It's time,
then do
everybody.
It. Go on. More words.
I'm on it.
I like
the
more words.
It's also big.
Oh, I like the words, but yeah. I also like that the clue they found in this episode was unique. It was
tempting, but that's not the clue.
Very different. You know what was was different about it?
It was juicy juice.
Yeah.
Wow. Liquid Schwartz.
Liquid Schwartz.
It was Liquid Schwartz.
It was.
That's what it seemed like. She's like, oh, yeah, this is some magic.
Yeah.
I wonder what that will lead
to. So it wasn't a poem. By the way, the poem was on a planet called Lyric.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Lyric.
Yes.
As in song lyrics.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, except I think it was spelled with a Q.
It was spelled,
Lyric poetry.
It was spelled, I think, Lyrek or something. But it was meant to sound like.
Yeah, and then they had the one that was the Trill Dots.
Trill Dots, right.
Which gave,
Trill
got, Dots. Got you to the,
right.
the Trill Planet.
Charming Janal.
Where Maul snuck onto the planet and put some tracking slime on Adira that turned out to be a space bug, which was actually a spider.
Yeah. Oh, and
not
by
a bug.
And did you notice they escaped again
spiders
this week?
Spiders aren't an insect.
They're so good as escaping.
Yeah, they escaped. They
and
got away.
We know they're good at escaping because Rainer's always like, they're so good at escaping.
Yeah, right.
From the beginning, from Red Directive, he was like, we got to get them because they're really good at escaping. Mm-hmm.
Rainer had another communication issue this week. This time was with Stamets and Adira when he was like telling them, like, you know...
Go on, more words.
Because that was after he was like, less words, you know, because they were like, this is this and this and this. He's like, don't tell me all that shit. And they're like, well, we got to do the thing. And he's like, we'll do it. And they're like, eh. And he's like, okay, go on, more words.
Yeah.
And then later on, at the end, Stamets got him back because like he was trying to like figure out what was going on with the thing. He was, Stamets said, okay, this is what Stamets said.
I'm excited.
It'll work.
Remember that scene where Stamets said it'll work? Yeah. It was at the very end. It okay, here's what it was.
Okay.
They go, if we hit it precisely with a sequential hexagonal pattern,
right.
it should stay open for approximately 60 seconds, but once it collapses, it's gone for good. And then Rainer says, instead of being like, okay, like earlier in the episode, he didn't need all that information. Mm-hmm. He was like, okay, this time Rainer wanted to know more. He was like, why hexagonal?
Yeah, right. Why?
So this time Rainer did want more information off the bat, whereas before he wanted less. And this time Stamets got him back because he was like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. It'll work.
Yeah.
So Stamets got him good. Yeah. He like really ribbed him hard there.
I just like hexagons, okay?
It'll work.
He ribbed him hard.
He gave him a good ribbon.
I'm making the opening.
I'm not 100% certain That is a phrase, Dan.
No,
in
yeah.
In the United States or any of the Commonwealth countries or other.
When you give someone a good ribbing, it means like you're chiding them. You're teasing them.
I'm familiar with the term ribbing someone. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just not personally familiar with the term to give someone a good ribbing.
Well, you can derive one from the other, I think.
Certainly. Certainly. One can derive what one wills.
Or is it like...
what one must.
When I was trying to say imposter syndrome and I said fraud complex, is that... I brought that up a couple times now. But that's a good example of mixing my mortifies.
Fraud complex.
Now, I know we're bouncing back and forth a little bit here, but a couple other things. The C story, I guess you'd call it. Was another thing I wasn't super engaged with. What I really liked was I liked the Rainer stuff. I know there wasn't a lot, but I liked Rainer in command, problem solving, and combining his sort of curt attitude with the skills of the people around him, the skills of his crew. And I thought that was a fun story and very engaging.
I don't need to know how the cake is boiled, Commander.
Killer and boil their cakes?
I think that's that right there.
That's character building.
That's Rainer's like all into like the human phrases. And I think I hypothesized that he wasn't quite getting them right before. And I think this could be evidence. Okay, either
this is a slogan apparently from a variation on a slogan from his home planet.
Right, because after he says
he's Kelleran.
Right. Well, after she says you boil your cakes and he's like,
don't knock it till you try it.
Yeah. Now he could be saying that because that's what they actually do in Kelleran, or he's saying that to try to cover his tracks and be like, oh, I meant to say that. You know, I think he just got the saying wrong. Because how do you boil how would you even boil a cake?
Or you can steam a cake.
But that's not boiling a cake.
Yeah, you put it in a bag and boil it.
Okay, but...
In fact, I think you can boil a cake.
It's like a pudding.
A flan is made that way. You put it in a dish
and
boil
I think about boiling a cake, I think of taking cake batter and putting it in water and bringing the water to a boil.
I understand that that's what you think. I'm saying that there are alternate ways that...
But that's not boiling a cake.
I think you would call it boil... Like you, like
a boiling a cake is taking...
Like a flan or a creme brulee, boil.
You boil a cake.
You boil?
Boiling a cake means putting the cake mix in water and boiling it. It doesn't mean whatever you're talking about.
How do you know what it means?
Because that's what boiling means. I'm not talking about steaming a cake. I'm talking about boiling. There's a vast difference between steaming and boiling.
Why are you talking about vast difference?
Dan, have you ever boiled a cake?
Pee-pee parts. Okay, enough pee-pee parts.
How much longer are you bucketheads going to make me wait?
Yes. The C story, because we already know the A story I'm not super excited about, as I mentioned, because of all the flashbacks and stuff. The non-flashback bits we haven't talked about. I like that part. ISS Enterprise.
What did you guys
think
of her calling him Green Eye?
I didn't really understand it.
Yeah, I thought it was a little weird.
I guess it was just because he has green eyes when he's all
it was supposed to be a cute sort of name, but you felt a little forced.
The on the ISS Enterprise stuff was fairly straightforward standard.
Is that actually the ISS Enterprise?
Yeah, that was weird. But anyway,
it was funny that he noticed it from way far off. Yeah, he didn't see like the top of it where it says ISS.
I'm not buying that. But anyway, but there was the flashback stuff I didn't like. But also there's like the C story with Culber sort of being upset or thrown off a little
bit. Yeah, I think the payoff was not good for that.
Well,
right.
Yeah. I
mean, it's also big.
I find it to be a bit of a rehash. He's already gone through one of the most existential dilemmas one could go through, having died and been brought back to life effectively. And, there was a whole season-long arc of him coming to terms with that. Mm-hmm. And I feel kind of bad. I'm like, I don't want him to be having a bad time. I want him to be having a happy time. And now they're not making it out that he's like super depressed or anything, but it's one of those things that's a little confusing. Is like, is he just feeling off? Is he feeling sad?
They made it seem like something very specific to me at the beginning of the episode. Like there was something specific bothering him, but it was really just sort of a general questioning of what it means to live and die.
Yeah.
Which I understand is a crisis scenario when you, like the idea, it's like I died and came back to life and now we're, and what's funny is how he kept saying, it's all so big. You can say like this sound right here.
mean, it's also big.
You can say that's funny because we joke about like how in Discovery all seasons it's such a giant endeavor. Yeah. Like it's
and Stamets has mentioned this. It's like this is such a big issue. Like everyone has made some comment, but variation.
It's,
on
it's almost like it's commenting on like the subject matter. It's like yeah, last season it was about saving the galaxy. Now it's saving life itself. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean the question of like what it means to live and die is a deep question, and it's a especially if you have died and live, and now you're talking about manipulating life. Yeah, I can see how you can go through a crisis of that, but the problem is like I just didn't it felt like there was something specific and it didn't go anywhere like yeah, maybe that's what you were getting anywhere is that we've already sort of dealt with that
maybe we it'll go somewhere it later
yeah maybe because like
but again is it another season long arc of Culber being like oh man life is fucked up and weird and
yeah
why can't it be like him having like a good time
if this pays off in like him having some crisis something that happens in later episodes that it'd be cool like oh they just hinted at it this episode but so far I'm not convinced that it's really gonna go anywhere it's just kind of like okay like but yeah
I sort of just feel sad. There's some characters who have gone through a lot and you're kind of like, why don't you like not have that character go through some shit? Not have them not be involved, but I don't know.
I
don't want to second guess the writers because again, who knows how
I think they just have fun beating up on Culber because he's like the level headed one that like say like,
the everyman. He's like the Chief O'Brien.
Well, more that he's the counselor. He's the one that like calms everyone else down.
He's got better abs than Chief O'Brien.
And so, when you're the guy who
Chief O'Brien,
when you're it's kind of like the joke about how the psychologist is the loony one. You know, yeah. It's kind of like that situation where he's the grounded one that keeps everybody calm, but then he's the one that has to deal with the most.
But
problems.
They dealt with that already too. Like,
right. So exactly. So there's really no. I'm not sure where they're going with that. Yeah. And Patrick just feels sorry for the poor guy.
Well, I agree with that too. Like I don't want him to have to keep going through this. Like
yeah, no. And I think they're just doing it because, like I said, it's they think it's fun to beat up on the guy who's supposed to keep everyone else calm.
Yeah.
It's like, but I'm not saying it's no. Hopefully, it goes somewhere at this point because they introduced it. I hope it goes somewhere. But
yeah. And I I give all credit.
But
to the writers.
I wish Culber nothing but the best. Yeah. You know? I mean, Culber, he was the one who said that he's got his emotion shit down, and he was able to let Janal take over his body, so he still has his shit together. But
well, I mean, that was his claim. Maybe the argument they're making is that he didn't have his shit together.
Yeah, I mean, because he did bring it. He did mention that when they were talking about.
Yeah, it's like okay.
When he was talking about everything's so fucked up.
We'll see.
So,
again, this is another thing that maybe makes more sense as the story goes along. But then it's like, how many components of this tale require information from the future to fully understand what's going on in the present? I know that's a style of storytelling, and I think often that can be an interesting way to go about things. Not 100% sure if it's working out in this season for some aspects of this story. But otherwise, overall, right, getting back to that whole sick bay scene, you got to have some of that classic two characters talking to each other, in this case, two pairs, right? Again, the mirror images, the two ex-couriers who are lovers.
Lovers.
The lovers.
Lovers.
And they get intermixed. In the intermixing chamber.
I keep thinking of who was that? Molly Shannon in Saturday Night Live. Yes. That seems like something like she. If anyone remembers Molly Shannon from Saturday Night Live,
I think plenty of people remember Molly Shannon.
That seems like something that she'd say. It's like love us, you know.
Well, wasn't
like,
there a bit with?
Wasn't she
that
like?
Other guy?
I'm glad Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell, yeah.
Has this tickled you?
Was that her? But wasn't
that
Sherry?
That was Sherry O'Terry.
Yeah, it was different. Yeah.
True. Sherry O'Terry.
I don't know how many people remember Molly Shannon. I mean, I remember her very vividly.
Molly Shannon is still
a little bit
acting.
I'm just saying
things.
Younger generations might have no idea who she is.
Well, maybe. If you are a member of the
Do
younger
they still
generation,
watch, that show,
the please write Saturday in Night at Live. feedback@itsgotstartrek.com with the subject line Molly Shannon / Sherry O'Terry.
There's an old Quajon saying, never return from hunt without enough bait for the carrion reaver.
Karen Reaver.
You left out the part where she was like catchy.
Oh yeah, never didn't need that part.
It was fun. They always have some fun, playful
yeah,
banter.
Some fun play. Yeah.
unlike my critiques of some of the other aspects here, the relationship stuff they're doing with Burnham and Book, I think that's working very well. I think it's proceeding in a mature and realistic manner where they're not being together because of him. You know, being sort of an international intergalactic criminal.
Yeah.
and causing a ruckus the last season.
It caused some trouble.
There's a justification for why they've grown apart, but at the same time, there's a path forward that they're sort of laying out. Who knows exactly where it'll end up, but there's a path forward that's not crazy. It's mm-hmm. a sensible path that they are currently walking, and they do have really good rapport together. So it is fun to see them together doing their thing.
I hope it works out between those two.
It would be swell.
Mm-hmm. It would be. It would be nice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then they could hang out with Grudge. I wish we'd see more of Grudge.
Yeah, I know. There was one line he was talking about, like Grudge. He says, ship feels good, purring like Grudge when she's killed something. Yeah. How often does Grudge get to kill things? I mean,
you know, that's a good question. I hadn't clocked that.
Space mice.
Some hollow rats.
Space
or something?
Beetles.
Space rats.
Holograms.
I don't know.
Holograms.
But yeah,
you can't kill a hologram.
Maybe they don't have enough money for the Grudge's trainer this season. Maybe that was budget cut.
Yeah, you know what? You could be right.
There was a moment that was almost a That's an Order moment.
Ooh.
Except it isn't.
Oh.
She tells Rainer that he needs to stay back, and he's like, I'm not confident. And she's like, yes, you are. And then she goes, you have your orders. And I say that's not an order. That's perfectly great. That's wonderful. Right. I'll go with that one. You have your orders.
Like okay, he's like some old dude, and she's Michael Burnham. Like, who's going to go on the away mission? Come on.
Yeah.
That was silly. I mean, I know what he was trying to do, but it was
Jesse,
silly.
What you've done there is you've succinctly made an excellent argument.
For anyone,
that's what I do.
For anyone who's unaware, I haven't done it in a while, I try to call out the points where they say that's an order because it's like kind of like this throwaway stereotypical kind of trite line.
It's very
a crutch line.
It's often trite.
Yeah, but this one was fine.
Dan has not only does he pay attention to counting up these occurrences and highlighting them, he also has a set of criteria. Many of the criteria are secret and held close to his vest, but he has a set of criteria that he can adjudicate which ones are good and which ones are shit. Mostly they're shit, though.
This one was good. And I have a game that I play called Duty or No Duty.
That game.
Been a lot of this lately. Okay, I'm
Is
ready.
Is there duty or no duty?
I'm ready.
The Primarch's nephew doesn't fit the mold around here, has been demoted to Shuttle Bay duty.
Duty or no duty?
That's a duty for me.
Duty.
Duty?
Demoted to Shuttle Bay duty.
Total duty.
Duty.
Total duty. Total, okay. We're all in agreement.
That's one of the dutiest.
That's all one right. of the dutiest.
Is that the only one this episode?
That's the only one this episode.
All right.
We were talking about...
I was about to talk about the whole unmasking of the Breen thing because there has been a little bit of scuttlebutt. A little bit of fervor.
A skirble blobble?
Buttle
skirt. On the internet.
Okay, back to the two-face thing real quick. Like, uh-huh. if one of their faces is the mask and the other is not the mask, uh-huh. then why is there a CGI face and a makeup face? Precisely, that's what doesn't make any sense.
Okay. Now, we'll walk through this. I do not, I will preface this by saying I do not have anything close to a satisfactory answer.
And
for
that's why I morphed my decision. I initially thought mask was one face, but that's why I changed my mind on that.
The first thing I wanted to note was that some people were
changed
a little
critical
or even upset of the decision to reveal what a Breen looks like, because it was a long running gag, particularly mm-hmm. on Deep Space Nine, that no one knew what the Breen looked like because they always were wearing these uniforms with these helmets. And there was speculation about what were they made of? What did they need the helmets to keep them cold, or what was the deal?
Right.
And some people lament that by showing the Breen now, you remove some of that fun.
Yeah,
from that,
I can
from
see that.
And I can see that as well. Some people also were saying like, well, no one has ever seen a Breen, so it, you know, whatever. We know that it's likely that both Kira and Gul Dukat on Deep Space Nine saw Breen because they stole uniforms from them mm-hmm. as disguises. Mm-hmm. So if you're stealing a disguise off a body, presumably
they probably had a backup mask on just for that instance.
Well, maybe. So I'm not worried about people seeing Brie. Okay. Like Brie don't seem to be like, oh, you can't see her face. It's not like a Mandalorian thing.
Right.
Not that we've heard of.
But what you're saying is like what you said, like about how the whole gag was you never see Brie's faces, yeah. right? That's why I think that the two faces, one is the CGI mm-hmm. and one is the makeup face, because the gag then is we've never seen the Brie face. And now the first time we see the Brie face, we find out they have not one, but two faces.
And we see both their faces.
And we see one is the CGI and one is the makeup face, and that's right. the gag.
So now for the explanation of the CGI business, again, this is just, I'm gleaning this from conversations people have had online, as well as some information from the episode, but it sort of seems like the Breen are some sort of liquidy type people, not shapeshifters per se, just sort of like some gloopy liquid people.
Yeah, they are gloopy.
But that they have the capacity to be solid or hold a solid shape if they want. And we can infer that from what the...
they're like a goo-based life.
Unfocused, inflexible, and weak.
Yeah, from what the uncle is saying. Because the uncle is sort of saying like that it's culturally gross to hold a solid form. That they can,
sounds like an asshole.
That they can do it, but that is like, it's kind of skeevy. That gives us some idea of like what their deal is.
Maybe the makeup face is, maybe it just represents that's the easiest face to be in. Cause it
makes that guy more of an outcast.
Like maybe it's okay. I don't know what were you saying?
Well, the Breen guy that's on the run, it makes him more of an outcast luck. if he's right. keeping solid the whole
right.
time.
Right. And I'm wondering if the makeup face just represents, that's their solid face. That's the unfocused and flexible and weak face. That's the easy face to hold on to. And so that's why it looks different to the viewer. It looks like it doesn't look like CGI because it's just supposed to mean like this is their easy, simple face. Right, and it's like takes effort to be the other face or something. Yeah. I don't know.
It wasn't super clear.
I don't know.
But why would you do that other face if it took effort? And the other face seems better.
Because it's
unfocused, inflexible, and weak.
Doesn't make any sense at all.
The first four episodes of the season,
I will cut through you.
There are a few critiques here and there, but I thought they were all very tightly written and very interesting and fun and generally speaking, very, very well put together. This episode just felt a little off. Partly was the writing and the flashbacks. There were some direction decisions that kind of weirded me out, like this constant zooming in and changing the angle, like zoom face.
Well, they do that
and then
Discovery.
Zoom out. No. This was a weird thing. Every single time they went to the flashback, they zoomed slowly in on Maul's face, and then the camera canted to the side, and then it would go to the flashback and then pull out from the zoom or some. There were some variations on that. It was just sort of done over and over. Again, not a big deal. It just kind of like it was throwing me off a little bit. It was
serve it without a grum of Asakan.
I did like that. She was learning his phrases.
Right.
That was all good. Like all the Burnham and Rayner stuff, like Burnham tugging on the winking butthole wormhole thing to do the pulses to with the code with
the winking butthole. Well, I thought you were gonna say rectum.
About a cask winking. Of citrus mash.
Yeah.
That sounded interesting.
A cask of Kelleran citrus mash for whoever lands it.
Okay,
Kelleran.
So this is part of my Star Trek lore thing. Star Trek things. So
six you said there were six items.
Yeah, a couple we've mentioned. First of all, we're introduced to Cardassian Vols. What's a Cardassian Vol?
We're not introduced to them. We've heard of them on Deep Space Nine.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's a thing?
It was the thing that infested the station.
Oh, are they all lizard-like or something? Are they lizard-like voles or something?
Sort of. They're
Vols
they're like
a mammal.
But they're sort of like they're like Cardassians. They're like mammals with like lizardy vibes.
Okay, the name of this section will instead be called Double Check Dan's List of New Star Trek Things.
Double Check Dan.
We can take voles off the list. Okay, number two. Breen have two faces. Not sure if that includes their mask or not. I say it doesn't. Patrick say it does. I see an argument for both. Number three, Locke contains the genetic code of the Yod Thot. The thing is Yod. So there's a thing called a Yod Thot, which is a Breen thing, which means they who rule. That's new lore. Okay.
Yeah.
A cask of Kelleran citrus mash for whoever lands this.
That's what Kellerans like to drink. We can learn that. And the Kellerans also have this sacred thing called the Ballad of Krull. not that movie Crawl from like 1983 or whatever.
Maybe it is.
But the Ballad of Crawl, in which they talk about the fucking what was it, the thing they said in there?
Click the button.
Are
you looking for the button dance?
I can't remember what it is they say.
Button,
hey,
all right, let me paint a picture for the audience. You know, in Star
Ballad of Crawl.
You know, in Star Trek II, when Kirk inspired. When Kirk uses the command codes to turn off the Reliance shields, and then Khan's helmsman or whatever, he's all like, the shields are dropping, and Khan's like, well, raise them. He's like, he slams his fist. He's like, I can't. Like the part where Khan is all like, he's like, where's the override? Where's the override? And Khan's all looking back and forth at the console. He's like looking for the
console.
Override.
Console.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. Dan was looking back and forth from his, because he's got a laptop. And he's got a tablet with all his sound effects and stuff. And Dan was just like, oh my God, where's the button again? Where is it?
I found it.
Ballad of Krull.
The Battle of Krull.
Ballad of Krull.
Serve it without a grum of Asakan.
That's what we learned. That's something they say in the Ballad of Krull.
All right.
The Ballad of Krull.
Anything else on that list?
We already talked about the Aragah. That's the other thing. This is Green Blood Bounty.
Aaron Gobrah. Aaron Gobrah. Ireland is famed for being very green. Do you think it was meant to evoke Aaron Gobrah? Or is that just in my twisted mind?
It's in your twisted mind.
Is it just because green sounds like green?
So maybe we can, I wonder if they'll tell us more about, like, because you know how we learn about the Ferengi's rules of acquisition? Uh-huh. Well, in section 4, verse 7 of the Ballad of Krull, they're talking about Krull calls to his war brother for rescue with a repeating drumbeat. 3 taps, then 4-1-4.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's how she figured it out. Oh, yeah, because they did the... I thought that Gallo, she figured out real fast that when the ISS Enterprise came out, mm-hmm. she figured out that there was a pattern to, like, the light fluctuations. Like, that's not unusual for a show to be like, for them to be like, huh, there's something weird about these lights. What's going on? It's like, oh, if you do it in Morse code, it spells this. But it usually takes them a while to figure out that there's a message involved. Yeah. She knew right off the bat that, like, there was some kind of pattern to that thing.
It wasn't even the Enterprise.
Yeah, she just knew. She just knew that shit. And it was 314, which is from the battle. That's how they knew that he knew it was Burnham, because it was from the Ballad of Krull.
Are you done with your lore list?
I'm done with my lore list.
Oh, because there's a bit of lore that you missed.
I'm sure there is. And I was actually looking over it. And I know there was something I missed. So if you can enlighten me, I would be appreciative.
So on the ISS Enterprise, when Burnham and Book get over there, they're thrown off by a couple of things. One is that it looks more like a refugee center than a warship, with all the cots and clear evidence that there were children.
Oh,
and other
that is lore,
there.
Yeah.
Action Saru in any universe.
The other thing was is that all the escape pods and shuttles and everything were gone, and the antimatter mixer chamber, whatever it was.
Yeah, that
was,
thing.
Whatever it was ejected. The point being that it was unusual for the mirror universe people, you know, to leave their ship. And of course, in the process, they learn that it's because the ISS Enterprise, after the original mirror universe, mm-hmm. where Spock takes over and decides to try to go for peace. Mm-hmm. We hear that there's somebody tries to make reforms. Maybe that Spock becomes that high chancellor or whatever, but the plaque is what recounts this tale. Memory Alpha had the text of the plaque, which I think is, I'll just read it real quick because it provides, I think, some pretty interesting and important lore for the mirror universe. The plaque says, "The new High Chancellor presented hope and justice as if they were natural to our world. His words, 'The light of hope shines through even the darkest of nights,' mm-hmm. became our rallying cry. He spoke of reform and changed many of us, but some saw this as weakness. They killed him, and we sought help from an unlikely ally, a Kelpian slave turned rebel leader.
Action Saru in any universe.
He spoke of visitors from another world, a near perfect mirror that casts our darkness into light. With his aid, we secured the Enterprise, but he stayed behind to continue his work. We bear scars from our escape, but our hope remains. May it carry us to a shining, peaceful, and just future." So what they're saying, and we've already discussed this a little bit, is that Saru, from after his adventures in season 1 of Discovery, Mirror Saru, we already knew the direction he was moving in that season. So here we get confirmation that he was at least somewhat successful in taking over this ship, maybe with the help of Mirror Spock.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
And traversing, you know, escaping their dimension into our dimension.
Well, they were interdimensional for a while.
Yeah. Now, what we don't know is we don't know exactly how this ship got into this pocket of interdimensional whatever. And the screenwriters, they were very bold. I think it didn't work out for them this time, because you have to be bold when you have a line like this at the beginning of your episode, where after they discover the ISS Enterprise, Burnham says, that's got to be one hell of a story. And referencing how did this ISS Enterprise end
it's
up?
It's got to be one hell of a story.
End up here in this pocket of space. And the thing is like yeah.
Yeah, it probably is.
But you never know.
And now I'm kind of interested in that. I'm right. A little bit more interested in that story
right.
Than the story.
What
story
was the
we
deal with
got.
Burnham and the locket?
Oh, okay. That took me. That was another one where they gave us the information backwards, so I didn't get it until my second viewing. What Burnham was doing was she took a piece from her uniform and put it in the locket, which was from that universe, because the clues have the signature.
Right.
They were
right.
Scanning for the signature of people from their universe.
Right. Okay.
And
okay.
they could differentiate that from the local pocket of whatever. And so she tricked them by saying, "Hey, remember the clues? They come in all sorts of shapes and sizes." She put it in the local locket so she could say, "See, I got the real clue. You have the fake clue." She was trying to trick them, and it worked briefly, but that not for long.
When I was seeing at one point they were having fire blasts in the ISS Discovery to show that it was all fucked up, and it looked like straight pyrotechnics to the max. It reminded me of, you remember the King of the Hill episode where they go to the Ren Fair and then Hank Hill has providing propane for the Ren Fair, and then the king guy shows him what he was doing with the propane. He was using it to light fire to arrows.
Yes.
And he shoots the arrow at that dragon that they built, and it makes the dragon breathe fire, and Hank's starts tearing up.
Right.
It's
so beautiful. Yeah.
You're saying that's what Reese looked like?
Well, when Reese looked like.
Because Reese loves the Constitution class. So I thought you meant Reese, the look on Hank's face.
No, but Reese,
the same as Reese when the Constitution class was coming through the wormhole.
No, I was talking about Reese actually had another moment this episode where he had another good idea. I don't remember what it was, but Reese had last episode he had a moment. Oh yeah, he was like, if we change out the photon torpedo payloads and replace them with the antimatter, and then that's the thing when Stamets kicks in, it would add fuel to the antimatter reactions already happening. And then Reese saves the day again, like he did. Yeah. The week before when Rayner didn't want to hear him. But no, what I was talking to is when the ISS Enterprise was all fucking up and there's sparks falling from the ceiling and shit. If you look at the fire that comes in, if you just look at the fire, it straight up just looks like, it looks like the fire is shooting from a tube, like pyrotechnics, you know, because it's just like,
because it is.
Yeah, it is. It's, or it's like if you watch WWE and you watch like some pyrotechnics.
Or
in
a
WWE,
Rammstein concert.
Something like that, yeah.
Du Hast.
It looked like a concert or something, yeah.
Biggin Titten.
It was kind of funny.
Yeah.
That's a choice.
It is. Ship Edlin.
All right. Okay. So I think that should do it for us this week.
Star Trek.
Star Trek. You've been Star Trek.
You've been Star Trek.
It's got Star Trek.
Yeah. So, you know, had a few critiques with this episode, but overall, still enjoying it. And I'm definitely looking forward to next week. But a reminder.
One more thing. The
holo doubles.
Remember when they had those holo doubles?
Yes.
Those look more like holo triples, if you ask me.
Yeah, it was holo a bunch of them.
Triples is best, though.
Triples is best.
What about quadruples?
Triples is best.
It was nice.
Yeah, it was nice. Okay, so a reminder, as we mentioned,
compensate for the Lorentzian coefficient in high energy spectra
at the top of today's episode. Next week, our discussion of what was it? Whisper speak.
Whisper whistle.
Whisper. Yeah. Whisper speak.
Whistle pow. Whistle pow. Mungo chungus. Whistle pow. Mungo chungus.
The discussion of that episode will be slightly delayed due to travel. But we will.
There is only one.
We will get to it the following week. But we will provide you with some new content. We'll have predictions for that episode, which you can enjoy, and we'll put up one of our Patreon exclusives. Write and let us know which one you'd like to hear from.
Hello.
From the list at patreon.com/ It's Got Star Trek.
Get a snack while you listen.
Feedback at It's Got Star Trek's the email.
Love is a powerful thing.
.itsgotstartrek.com is the website.
I don't know.
Append a /record to that website if you want to send us a voicemail. or catch us on social media at It's Got Star Trek, wherever you like.
Let's check it out.
If we're there, we're there. And we'd love to chat with you.
If we're not, we're
just... chat with you on the line there. Okay.
Get out of my way!
we thank you very much for enduring this particular episode. We'll be back.
Fix the problem yet?
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
It was fun while it lasted. Green light.
It was fun while it lasted.
Fix the problem yet?
Lieutenant Tilly is attempting to boost the comm signal, but interference from the aperture's rapid shuttering...
I don't need to know how the cake is boiled, Commander.
Kelleran boil their cakes?
Don't knock it till you try it.